From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fourth day of August 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the Senior Grains Analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news this afternoon, the hay and grazing of CRP battle is not over yet, and mandatory cool should not affect consumers. I'll have more on these and other agricultural news stories in a few moments, and then in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all comes up on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
In Chicago on a Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby September wheat today, 35 and a quarter cents lower. Settlement price at $7.58 and three quarters, down 35 and one quarter for the September soft red winter wheat. December futures at $7.83 and three quarters, 35 and a quarter lower. At the March contract at $8.75, finished 34 and one quarter lower. September wheat in Chicago, $7.96, down 26 and a quarter. In Chicago, that would be in Kansas City for the hard red. In Chicago now, the corn futures September contract at $5.35, 29 and a half lower. December at $5.55, down 29 and a half. And March futures $5.75 and three quarters, down 29 and one quarter. May contract in the corn pit at $5.88, down 30 cents on the afternoon. And if we take a look at the December futures for next year in the corn pit, they're down 26 and a half today at $5.96.5. From the soybean pit, August contract $12.87, down 70 and three quarters. September at $12.85.5, limit lower. November at $12.95, January at $13.13, the March at $13.28, and the May at $13.38, all down the 70 cent limit. November of next year at $13 even, finished limit lower as well, down 70 cents in Chicago from the grains floor. Soybean meal futures at $3.54, down $19.90. August down $2.51 in the bean oil at $54.10. Mercantile exchange site, August feeder cattle at $100.17.5, 15 higher. And the lean hogs finished the August at $82.25, 67.5 higher. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. This is the reason most of the trade was lower, or it's part of the reason most of the trade was lower. September crude oil futures went all the way down to $120.50. They're currently trading at $121.35. That $120 is a magical level and a support level that most are hoping that oil can stay through at least before things start to fall apart again in that particular pit. $3.75 lower for September at $121.35. October futures at $121.60, down $3.90. August ethanol futures at $224.50, 14.5 lower. The natural gas trading the September at $8.67.6. That's down 71.3. The September RBOB gasoline, $3.04, down 8 cents for the day, or rather 8 cents for the day. And diesel fuel at $3.35.5, 8 1/10 lower. Propane September contract $178.5, 3 cents higher on the afternoon. Gold futures at $900.05, $8.90 lower for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 11,366, just about 40 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 73.45 is up 0.09, and the CRB index at 402.30. That's down 13.72. Here's what the weather forecast from our own Mike Sola looks like for tonight. He says in the north, it'll be considerably cloudy. Some scattered showers will move in along with a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy. Muggy in all areas this evening, says Mike. Lows between 70 and 75. Tomorrow in northern sections in central Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny with a chance for a widely scattered thunderstorm or two. Highs tomorrow, says Mike, from 85 in northwestern Illinois to 98 in the far south. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now to take a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Depending on which side of the market you were on, this was an awfully good day or an awfully bad day. Tell me how it took place.
Well, just a free-for-all. For ones that's been long or wanting the market to go up, it wasn't very good at all. For those that are short or wanting the market to go down, it was a great day. Basically, the trend's down, and the risk is to the downside here. As you mentioned there earlier, you know, the outside markets were also sloppy. As we've said way back last winter, the worst fear would be if the funds would ever want to liquidate, and that's what we're seeing here. I have seen here for the last almost month, actually, them starting to head to the sidelines, and hopefully here they will get to where they want to be and see this liquidation stop. But on the flip side, as been well advertised, is basis is starting to narrow up here as the future starts to become oversold and demand is showing up on the cash side of the equation. So even though overall net price is lower than where it was, the risk is we could go quite a bit lower from here yet.
Well, quite a bit lower, but I had a question. I don't know how relevant it is at this point, but earlier in the year, one of the things that one of our analysts had suggested was that most had not protected their upside potential in the marketplace enough. And I'm wondering whether things have changed from the supply and demand side at this point enough that you don't need to consider that anymore, or whether it would be prudent to be prepared to pull the trigger to protect upside potential in the marketplace as we go forward into the harvest season.
We believe that if one wants to replace cash sales, or one that wants to get some positions on to give you courage to go ahead and sell the cash down the road, that we probably need to do in this next 30 to 45 days. If you look at a seasonal chart and look at past history, we've been putting the lows in prior to harvest. With the funds liquidating, driving the market too low, this is an excellent opportunity to be getting geared up on the long side. But the problem is most average people look in the rearview mirror and say, man, I should have sold, instead of look at the opportunity to be buying on this break. So, yes, we feel that for feed guys who need livestock guys that need to book feed, you need to be using this break to buy. For speculator or wanting to replace sales, you got to use this break to get in here. But fundamentally, it's going to be hard to do, because if you look at the supply demand balance sheet and you start adding bushels to this, you add say 4 bushels on yield, you're going to take your carry out up over a billion bushels. If we be fortunate enough to see a real good yield of 158 bushels an acre on corn, carry out could escalate up to 1.6 billion bushels, and that's not very bullish at all. Same thing in the beans. If you add just a half a bushel, you can take carry out to 175 million bushels. If you add 1 bushel yield to it and multiply it times harvest acre, you can take carry out to 212. But the unknown on that, though, is I did not mention it, and maybe the USDA or report next week on the 12th will shed a little light on, is harvested acres.
Correct.
And that's going to be a wild card. It feels like the March 30th report, it feels like the June acres report all over again. So the calculators and computers are going to be going wild come 7:30, August 12th.
That's right. Everybody be looking at the national average yield, but you've got to remember you need to multiply that by whatever USDA says the harvested acreage is going to be, and that's an additional part of the report that they've been working on since, I suppose, since the June 30th report. They've been collecting additional information on what happened in Iowa and Indiana in particular, and other places, Illinois as well, and resurveying producers.
Yeah, and one thing just to add to that, in just appearance or the beauty contest is mentioned sometimes is the corn conditions. You got corn conditions 66% good to excellent. Last year we were at 58% good to excellent. Last year, you know, we had 151 bushels to the acre. So in the average person eyes, you got to add some yield to that. On the beans, we're at 62% good to excellent. Last year, we were at 58% good to excellent this time of the year, and we were 41.2. So I think that might be one other thing that the trade's looking at, sort of, you know, say, why should I buy when the crop's better than last year? Whether that's true or not, we'll see, because, you know, it looks good. There's great debate on, you know, the low-lying areas, and there's great debate how deep this root system's going in, really absorbing these the nutrients or not.
Okay, so take me through a couple of things. You said there was quite a bit of downside potential yet in the marketplace. How much in the corn? How much in the beans?
You really want to know?
I guess somebody out there's going to
want to know. If you're a chartist, and, you know, we consolidated sideways here for about 2 weeks. If that's the midway down, if that's midway congestion, you can take corn, these corn clear down to 350. So we got about another $2 down.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing in the beans. If you look at the chart and figure these 2 weeks of sideways congestion, midway, we could take beans another $3 down to 10.5.
All right, and then you have upside potentials from there?
Well, back to right now, be happy
back
to get
to
back
get.
To where we were here a week ago. About the only thing I can see is we get a Labor Day freeze, we could probably challenge the highs again.
All right. Anything to add on the livestock side? I guess if you're thinking there's that much, and we asked this over the weekend on Commodity Week, whether we thought those on the livestock side ought to be locking things in. When do they do it? I mean, when do you know that the time has come?
Well, you can give us a call. We'll tell you what day. Back to when we started, we believe that you've got between now and probably late September.
Okay.
We feel that these injuries are going to come forward, and the cash side is going to find pretty good demand here this fall. The weak dollar is still generating some export business in through here, but we encourage the livestock guys to get some coverage on. Also, two option volatility is coming down the call side. These calls are going to get pretty cheap. I can't say pretty cheap, but they're going to be cheaper than what they were here, you know, for the last year here in the next 2 weeks. And there's some creative ideas you could do to get some cash actually priced and also do some type of coverage using futures and options. I'd encourage everybody to call your analyst or your broker. They've all got good ideas.
Okay, thanks much, Kurt.
Sorry to be a bearer of bad news.
Oh, that's all right. Sometimes it has to happen. We appreciate you being with us.
Hope I'm wrong. Thanks, bye.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities, where he serves as their senior grains analyst. And he's based in Bloomington, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. Happens each and every Monday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Learned Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Learned Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Learned Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In today's agricultural news, identical bills have been introduced into both the House and the Senate that would require the Ag Department to carry out the Conservation Reserve Program's critical feed use rules, which were released in May. The identical bills would allow all farmers and ranchers to participate in the critical feed use program, not just those farmers and ranchers who've met the $4,500 proof of investment. The Ag Department originally authorized acreage in the CRP to be available for haying or grazing after primary nesting season ends for grass nesting birds. We'll stay in the livestock area but move to cool. Mandatory country of origin labeling is scheduled to go into effect September the 30th, and many are wondering how it will impact consumers as well as retailers who must implement the rules. USDA Ag Marketing Service Administrator Lloyd Day says there will be little noticeable impact on consumers. He says, I don't think they're going to even see a lot of changes, actually. It's really going to be most affected in the meat sector because a lot of the fruits and vegetables are already labeled products of Mexico or product of Chile. So they're used to buying foreign goods already. They're looking for quality and looking for price. Day says in the meat aisle, the place that could see the most impact from cool is beef. The American consumer, he says, is going to make a choice. Do they want purely American steak, or do they want steak that may have come from an animal that was born in Canada or Mexico? And will that have an impact on their decision-making process? From livestock, we move to energy. The American Farm Bureau Federation has sent a letter to Congress asking them to work together to pass a comprehensive energy plan to alleviate pressure on consumers from high energy prices. AFBF says clearly legitimate policy issues need to be addressed in crafting an energy plan that encompasses such an approach, and it will need the cooperative constructive efforts of members from both political parties. Bob Stallman of AFBF says we urge the leadership of both parties in both houses of Congress to put aside short-term political considerations and work together to craft a long-range, bipartisan, effective energy plan that will finally put our nation on a path toward affordable energy independence. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican of Kentucky, did announce he would accept the offer of four amendments from Majority Leader Harry Reid. That's a Democrat out of Nevada. The number of amendments has been the main sticking point between the two parties on the energy speculation bill. However, the agreement may not move the bill forward. As Reid said, any deal on the speculation bill would require Republicans to stop a filibuster of the tax extenders package in the House last Wednesday. Similar legislation that would provide better oversight to the commodity and energy markets fell short of the two-thirds vote needed to pass it under the suspension of House rules. The bill would require the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, or CFTC, to establish requirements limiting speculation and strengthen the CFTC with legal authority and increase staffing to address oversight, surveillance, and regulation questions. And finally today, under a joint Department of Energy and Department of Ag program, more than $10 million in grants will soon be awarded to 10 universities over the next 3 years. That to accelerate fundamental research in biomass genomics to further the use of cellulosic plant material for bioenergy and biofuels. USDA is committed to fostering a sustainable domestic biofuels industry at home in rural America, says Ag Undersecretary of Research, Education, and Economics Gail Buchanan. She says these grants will broaden the source of energy from many crops as well as improve the efficiency and options among renewable fuels. USDA is putting $2 million towards the grants. The DOE's Office of Biological and Environmental Research is providing the other $8.8 million. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of WILL. That's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, up next, pork producers have a place to turn for advice and information in these tough economic times for them. That thanks to a joint project of the Illinois Pork Producers Association and U of I Extension. I'll have more on the Managing Pig Production in Tough Times website. Pork producers in the U.S. now face economic hardships so serious that many will leave the business, says Jim Pettigrew. He's a University of Illinois professor of animal sciences. Pettigrew, with funding from the Illinois Pork Producers Association, the IPPA, has put together a website with information to help farmers manage their way through very difficult economic conditions. Here's how he explains it when you enter the website.
I'm Jim Pettigrew. I'm with the University of Illinois Department of Animal Sciences and the Illinois Extension Service. And I'm here to introduce an extension program on managing pig production in tough times. This program is presented entirely on the web. There will be several segments presented by individual subject matter experts, all of whom are attempting to provide reliable and practical recommendations for use by pig production producers in difficult times such as these.
At the website, which you can find by searching for Illinois Pork Producers Association, users will find seven presentations by experts on their respective topics. They include Purdue University ag economist Chris Hurt discussing price risk, and from the University of Illinois, Rob Knox on reproduction, Larry Firkins on health and employees, Mike Ellis on management, Ted Funk on engineering, Hans Stein on nutrition, and of course Jim Pettigrew on feeding programs. Additionally, a special call-in program has been scheduled to deal with the questions. The program will be from 7 to 8 p.m. Central Time, August the 19th. Those with questions may dial in at 1-800-347-8268. The phone number and details are on the website, which again you can get to directly through the Illinois Pork Producers Association site. The address for that one is www.ilpork.com. You can even submit questions in advance of the meeting if you'd like. Jim Pettigrew says the genesis of the meeting was a tour he took of Australia last winter and the difficulties he found pork producers were facing in that country.
And while I was there, I heard lots of stories of problems with pig producers. One consultant told me that his job is no longer formulating diets. His job is counseling his clients on the phone about the losses that they're sustaining and what to do about those losses. So it is a worldwide problem, except, and so far as I know, the only exception is the country of China, where pig production is still profitable.
At least for the moment. For the rest of the world, especially here in the United States, Pettigrew says the very first decision a pork producer has to make is whether they are in or they are out. If they're in, then he urges them to visit the IPPA-sponsored Managing Pig Production in Tough Times website. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL Radio in Urbana, Illinois. We welcome today new affiliate WGFA out of Watseka, Illinois. Joining us now to take a look at the cash grain market is Brian Stark of the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the question today, I guess, is this. Is the Andersons and their lenders feeling better today?
Oh, yes, of course. You're always feeling better when you see the market go down. But in all retrospect, obviously a lot of people, including ourselves, have think this has been overdone. We're obviously at levels that are pre-flood stage levels. And yes, the crop's getting better, but I think it's a long way to go before it's in the bin. The later maturity is going to create some concern regarding frost down the road. I think that's inevitable. Obviously, we've escaped the heat wave, quote-unquote, from the weather guys that they talked about last week. But yet again, we need to continue with ideal conditions, and there's only so many sunny days out there to help finish this crop out. So hopefully that'll continue to go at that pace.
Farmers doing anything other than calling you asking when the pain will stop?
I think that's the main thing they can't comprehend, because according to them, of course, you have to take it with a grain of salt. They think that the crop isn't as good as most of the private guys are guessing, and I would tend to say that, you know, some of the numbers we've heard float around 157 from a few guys. We'll wait and see if that's really true in the USDA report next week, but other than that, they're just trying to understand why things have liquidated so fast, and our response has been the funds giveth and the funds taketh away. I mean, the same thing that caused us to go up to $8 corn is taking us probably lower than most people anticipated.
Very
but
quickly,
the main thing.
Your bids for the day.
501 cash corn, fall corn's 505, cash soybeans 1270, fall beans 1195.
Thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Brian Stark of the Andersons. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Raspberry Cream Pie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first U.S. census was taken. We had a total of 3,939,214 mouths to feed. In 1793, France introduced the first metric weight, the kilogram. In 1817, Sir Joseph Henry Gilbert was born. Gilbert and his partner, Sir John Laws, conducted agricultural experiments at Rothamsted Experimental Station, the oldest agricultural research station in the world. They are considered founding fathers of the agricultural sciences and are also co-inventors of superphosphate fertilizer. In 1870, Ilya Ivanov was born. Ivanov, a Soviet biologist, developed the practical procedure for artificial insemination of domesticated animals. Initially used on horses, by the 1930s, the procedure was used on other farm animals. And in 1893, Henry D. Perkey and William Ford patented shredded wheat. Whole wheat is boiled, dried, pressed into thin shreds, and finally baked. They presented the product at the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago, Illinois, in 1893. When their patent expired in the mid-1930s, the name, shredded wheat, became generic. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Urbana-Champaign. On the line with us this afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast is Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, I look out at the satellite and don't see a lot of rainfall out there at the moment, but I'll bet it's hot.
Particularly the rain that have occurred here has been up across the northern sections of the Midwest. So that's actually the cool spot, those areas along and north of I-80. But down south, that is where the heat wave is ongoing here, and that will continue for another couple of days before a cold front sweeps through and brings relief tomorrow night and more so into Wednesday.
If our thermometer is to be trusted outside, it's 88 degrees here, but our temperatures are going to get warmer.
Well, this is pretty much the peak heat for the most part, although tomorrow will still be will still have similar temperatures to what we're experiencing today across the southern portion of the Midwest. Whereas in and around the Champaign-Urbana area, as well as much of east-central Illinois, you're seeing highs generally in the low 90s today. But you just go further out west in areas of Missouri, and you're getting approaching mid-90s, and then further west, hundreds across much of the Plains region today, which has been a constant theme over the past several days.
And that's the heat index that's the real killer out there.
Yeah, and that is due to the very high dew points in place across much of the southern Midwest. We're seeing dew points in the upper 70s, even just noticed a few 80s in south-central areas of the state here. And it's kind of the result of our wet pattern here over the past several weeks, which you can trace back into the spring and even prior to that. So all that moisture is being evaporated, resulting in the very high dews.
You suggest that today will be the warmest day, and then we kind of cool off, taper off until when? Wednesday, when we get a cold front that passes through?
Well, it depends on where you're at, Todd. At least for your area there, you can expect similar conditions tomorrow. Before then, conditions cool off on Wednesday.
Okay, and if you take a look around the rest of the planet, what do you just see?
Pretty quiet conditions out there. China, their corn and soybeans continue to be stress-free for the most part, no issues there. We're seeing improvement in rainfall across India with the lack of monsoon there recently. And then finally down in South America, their winter wheat crop, actually seeing some dryness issues there and no relief, though, in sight to make up some of the rainfall deficits in Argentina.
And the last thing I'd like to be have you take a look at, or at least talk about just a bit, most are concerned that the crop is far enough behind in the United States, despite the fact that it looks awfully good, that some of it, a good portion of it, may get bit by an early or a regular frost. When are the frost dates, and what are you thinking about it at this time?
Well, looking across the Midwest overall, your normal frost or freeze date is right around October 1st for the far northern sections of the Midwest. And then for areas such as, well, let's for example here in Illinois, you're right around October 1st for the northern portion of the state, middle portion of the state closer to October 15th, and then towards the end of the month, far south here. Now, that's an average, and obviously that fluctuates year to year. And the way it looks right now is that right now to us, in our opinion, there's nothing pointing towards at least an exceptionally cold October.
Okay.
And so that's our prospects right now.
Thanks much.
My pleasure.
That's Mark Russo. He's with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. You've been listening to the Closing Mark Report on Urbana-Champaign Campus Public Radio.